Hello, grandkids, and welcome to OPA 52, the episode, Ken, that I've been looking forward to since now we officially have one episode per week for a calendar year.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, although we have missed a few weeks in between here and there, not too often, I would say.
Yeah, we have come up with a couple of specials, one of which I was already discussing whether we're going to do Sharknado 3.
Oh, yeah.
A la Sharknado 2. I believe that is coming up sometime in the recent future. I did mean to look that up as we were sitting here talking.
For those who maybe aren't familiar, we, for the last installment of the Sharknado saga, we got together and watched it. It's sort of live podcasted, I guess you'd say. Every commercial break, we would take a little break ourselves and kind of go over what had just happened. And then we put that out basically after the episode was over.
22nd of July is when Sharknado 3, Oh Hell No, comes out. So, yeah.
Huh.
Frankie Muniz is in it from, what was, oh shit, what was his show? Because Bryan Cranston was on it.
Breaking Bad?
No, not Breaking.
Malcolm in the Middle?
Malcolm in the Middle.
There. Yes. Oh, yeah.
He was Malcolm.
He was Malcolm, of course.
Yeah, so it looks like he's the new lead here. Oh no, there's Ian Ziering, but he's kind of down the list.
Wow, maybe he is like passing the torch.
Rick Fox, excellent.
So, any word on where this is taking place? I mean, we were in New York and Los Angeles already. Oh. Are they back in LA?
Oh, DC and Orlando, Florida.
Wow, Orlando, interesting.
Yeah, by location here.
I wonder if they're going to get a little controversial and maybe like bring in like some of the Blackfish sort of sentiment maybe and have like a killer Shamu flying through the air down there in Orlando.
I guess I was figuring the president would get eaten in D.C. That was the first thing that popped into my head.
Well, that's not bad. Yeah. I would say that there's got to be some monument devastation if they're going to have it in D.C. At the very least.
No, at the very least, one of the sharks gets impaled on the Washington Monument.
That's a good one, but I think you're safe.
I think I'm calling for a bet in Vegas on that one. Shark gets impaled on the Washington Monument.
Although, if that did happen, it would almost be like, I would expect the shark to kind of like fall to pieces rather than be impaled because it's like so big, you know.
But these sharks are extra large and they're extra deadly. I mean, they fly.
Right.
I mean, Ziering
that's true.
Could jump into one with a chainsaw and still be swallowed whole.
Yes, I think they've established that the physics of this universe that this takes place in are different than what we're familiar with here in this one.
They are a little skewed, to say the least.
I mean, it is on the Sci-Fi Channel. Obviously, people don't realize that this takes place. I mean, it's no different than Game of Thrones, people. It's like a different world somewhere, you know? or to throw back to like a Dragonlance reference here, you know, this is Kryn, if you will, for the Sharknado world. You know, this is like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
it's like
I can't disagree with you.
There was like the Dragonlance world, which was known for having dragons and lances, equally well for both, I guess I'd say.
Yeah, although the dragons were pretty limited again. People love to write about the time when the dragons aren't like wrecking the whole world and there's only a few of them left.
That is true. I guess that dragons sort of reappeared during the Dragonlance novels, at least.
Right. And in Game of Thrones, there's only the three of them, I think. Like, and they just made a reappearance.
Exactly. It's pretty much the same. Yeah, that's true. Except there is only three in Game of Thrones at this point.
Even in Lord of the Rings, the dragons are pretty limited because Smaug dies really relatively recently within the history of that whole story.
Well, you know, we weren't planning on it, but I'm so glad we got to talk about Lord of the Rings here this evening. If anyone is playing the Opa drinking game, I think you can take a shot at this point because we've somehow come around to Lord of the Rings again. But
I was thinking that we could go into our subject at hand and say honestly. This disease that you pointed out to me in your one article about not being able to recognize faces.
Yes.
Honestly, that is something to me that is sci-fi movie
Yeah.
Like, it's a real condition that people have that they cannot make out someone's face. Like, they don't they don't connect a face with a name.
Prosopagnosia is what it's called, or face blindness. And I know that this is something I'd heard of before, but for some reason this article in the interview that they did with this lady really kind of caused me to think about it, I guess, a little bit differently than I had before, because it does sound like a real problem for her, you know, like it really profoundly affects her life.
Yeah, I mean, this would be, if we were going to get to do callbacks, this is like the people who have the electromagnetic problem and they are moving to the middle of nowhere, West Virginia, where National Telescope was. Like, their lives were so impacted by the new equipment that people use, they had to kind of move to a quiet zone.
Yes.
And this woman, like, just because of her inability to recognize faces, like, she really would prefer to be she's in a town of 500 people.
Yeah, so there's not as many people to try to recognize, I guess, which
right.
makes sense.
And just like, and you were saying how it profoundly, affected her life, just some of the things that happened in her life, were just, it still seems odd to me. Like, she explained it, but just the fact that you can't even recognize family members.
Yes.
Like, even at a first glance is wild to me. Like,
there's some wild stuff there.
Well, it's one of those things where she was talking about, you know, being able to see physical tics on people and identifying them that way. I can't believe that they don't have, like, it'd be almost like someone who's blind altogether, where you would think that their hearing would be better in some fashion. Or at least they would concentrate on hearing better so that they could tell people's voices apart better, I guess. Like, that to
that
me
that would compensate somehow?
Yeah, that it would either compensate or you would just, you know, make a conscious effort.
Well, yes.
To help battle. Like, if you can't notice someone's face, I think that voices, for the most part, are fairly distinct.
Well, and that's a strange thing because it's not as though this person who has this prosopagnosia, I don't know. I put the article away there. But,
That seems like prosopagnosia. Yeah.
Prosopagnosia.
Yeah.
So it's it's not like
one.
The person can't see. They can see fine and they can hear fine, but it's like there's a part of your brain. You know how like you have on your computer, there's like the CPU and the memory, and then there's also the GPU, maybe you would know that, like, that is the graphical processing unit.
Right.
That is better at doing graphical type calculations that would involve making things move around on your screen. So it's like there's that part of your brain that is good at recognizing faces. Like, that's kind of what it does.
Yeah, I mean, that fact in and of itself was kind of wild, that there's a separate part of your brain that just... Because, yeah, basically, the woman... I think that she can see clearly. It's just that they don't connect the face to the name.
Yes, so she can see the face just fine.
Yeah, it's not like, well, both you and I wear contacts, where, like, I might not be able to see a face without contacts and or glasses on.
Right.
But that's different. Like, she just can't make that connection, and that's what that one part of the brain does, is make that connection between
right.
a name and a face, and that's just... Yeah, that, like I said, in and of itself is
like, it
crazy.
Makes you wonder what it is that they're seeing, you know? The picture that they had with the article makes, like, everybody's faces give a swirly, which I guess, I mean, it looks kind of cool. But I think another either podcast I would listen to or something, or it might have been on this Radiolab show, because, yeah, I'm pretty sure it was, but because the guy who also they were talking about, Oliver Sacks, who was the... you remember that movie Awakenings with Robin Williams?
Oh, yeah, I didn't see it, but I'm familiar.
Yeah, he's the guy that Robin Williams was playing. He's like the real guy.
Okay.
But he had that propagnesia, milk of magnesia.
Yeah, I mean, we need to...
Face blindness, we can call it,
I suppose. Let's go with that, because it's a hell of a lot easier to pronunciate.
Exactly. And remember... face blindness, yeah, he had it as well. And he kind of, I think, or somebody said, if you imagine, like, you would see maybe a tree, and, like, the bark is, like, put in some kind of distinctive way, right? Like, every tree is a little different. But, like, if you try to, like, remember what a tree looked like later, or, like, to be able to, like, pick a tree out from a lineup by looking at its bark... Like, you wouldn't really be good at that, because that's your brain doesn't specialize in remembering what trees look like, you know?
Yeah.
So there's something with the face and, like, the way things are situated there that, like, we have reasons to remember faces and to be able to, like, recognize someone based on their face. So that's why there's that part of our brains that just do that.
Yeah. And the woman in the article described it in a similar way. She said that you could look at a bowl of fruit.
Oh, yeah.
And you could go, okay, it's a bowl of fruit. But if she took it away from you and then asked you what was in the bowl, you might not necessarily, you know, remember everything that was in the bowl of fruit.
Or to be able to, like, say, like, okay, the orange slice was on top of the cherry, and then... there was a piece of melon, and then over here on the other side was the cantaloupe. Yeah.
Or even, yeah, be able to name exactly where it was. So,
right.
I was like, okay, I guess that kind of makes sense, but it's still just, it's just wild. And the fact that they had mentioned that this disease has been mentioned as early as the 1800s.
That part surprised me. Like, I hadn't heard of that before. It seems kind of crazy that they were able to, I don't know. Like, I guess that's around,
like,
the time
they actually believed somebody.
Yeah, exactly.
They were, you're a witch.
Yeah. I guess I was going to say, like, that's the time where they probably wouldn't be thinking someone was a witch anymore. So they,
yeah, I guess the, 1800s, we might've gotten past the whole witch thing at least.
And I don't know if you remember this, Kevin, but a while back, Brad Pitt came under some razzing for claiming that he had a type of face blindness where he was not good at remembering people's names, like, or faces, I guess.
Oh, I think I barely remember this. But I did not think twice of it. Like, it just sounds like such a crazy thing, but then you listen to this, or listen, because I read the article.
You listen to the voices in your head, yeah?
Yes, I listened to the imaginary voices in my head as this woman talked. And I mean, even if you don't believe her, I mean, like you said, it's profoundly impacted her life. Like, if nothing else, like, it's, you know, some type of mental baggage that she has. But, you know, because, oh, there were Dartmouth, though, professors, two doctors actually, that were looking into this. And they have helped people with their problem in the meantime. So, I mean, it doesn't really affect that many people, but there are enough people out there that they know that it really is a thing.
And it was kind of interesting because there was an example in the story of people like coming across a story of someone else who had this face blindness and then realizing that, oh, they have face blindness. Like, that explains why they have such trouble, like, in their lives. Like, I guess it wouldn't be something obvious to you, really, if like, you had that problem.
Yeah, and I would even think that some doctors might think you were crazy if you said this to them. Like, I can't imagine that they're all up and up on their game. Like, I mean, some doctors are, maybe some aren't.
Right. I mean, I'm sure even the 1800s, a lot of the doctors were probably not going along with it, but, you know, some today probably still wouldn't, but and would that even be the sort of thing you would talk to your doctor about even, you know? I mean, it's like just something you would think like you were bad with whatever, you're just bad at it for some reason.
Yeah, that would be one where if someone told me that they were bad at remembering names, I guess, was kind of a typical thing.
Mm-hmm. Now I would imagine
I see that.
It's like most things where some people are better at certain things than others. So I'm sure that it's a sort of a spectrum, right? And some of these people are at the very, you know, tippy end of the one by not having any of this, right?
Well, they do say that less than 2% of the population has this problem.
Right, where it's probably severe, I guess.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, they do test people's mental abilities in other ways, so...
Yeah, but they still say that, that these professors tested over 10,000 people still that had it.
Wow, that is a shitload. Like, to do a study with 10,000 people, I mean, that sounds like a lot. Like, normally, I think it's like, you know, 1,500, maybe. 1,500 is like a lot, yeah. But 10,000, that's huge.
Yeah, that does seem like it. But, I mean, I would imagine that kind of like being, I don't know if alcoholic's the right word, or the right kind of group, though, but I would think once you realize that you have a problem, that you would try to seek any counseling you could.
Yeah.
And when the counseling is limited to like a guy at Harvard and a guy at Dartmouth, it might be kind of easy to find.
Well, I guess that would be like, I would think it would, if nothing else, you would feel better about like not blaming yourself maybe and thinking like you could just try harder and, be better at recognizing people's faces and things.
Right.
But, you know, then you're right. If they can actually study it and try to learn how to maybe work with it or get a fix for it eventually. I don't know. That would be kind of cool to do, too.
They just know so little about it so far that...
It is wild that she would even, like, not recognize herself in the mirror sometimes, like, if she was surprised by her reflection.
Yeah, know? That's how extreme it was.
Yeah.
I was just like, that's just crazy that you can't recognize yourself.
Yeah. Or, like, your, you know, husband or wife. That would be pretty unusual. And she said she ended up marrying someone who had... distinctive hair and a voice, I believe she said.
Yeah, she also dated him for 5 years.
Yeah, so that she
they knew each other for 5 years before dating.
And she said, too, that having a beard or glasses helps, you know, to be able to kind of differentiate people. Because like you said, she can still see things. So, like, she can see, oh, beard, like, things that are easy to see, I guess, right?
Right.
But there's so many, like, subtle things that your brain kind of... puts together for you, I think, like how far apart someone's eyes are, or you know, the nose, how it lines up with your mouth or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, that was kind of funny that she said that she did. It helped to not be good looking for her to recognize you.
Yes.
If you did, like you were saying, like, and she was even saying it about her daughter, how like she sees like this little just like lip quiver or something, or like the way she smiles.
Right.
She recognizes that more than she recognizes her face.
Right. So she can wait until she sees that facial expression, she says, and then she'll know which one is her daughter, which is just crazy to think about if you don't have face blindness. Now, I guess I was kind of trying to make a bit of a, defense of Brad Pitt there to say that there could possibly be people who kind of have lesser versions of this.
Yeah, I mean, like any disease, there are usually extremes and less mild cases.
Mm-hmm. Or just, your mileage may vary in general, I guess. Different people are different. And that's what we're trying to tell you guys, and I think that's really what we wanted to talk about today.
Yeah, well, aliens could be different than you think, Ken.
What?
Yeah, they maybe they have face blindness. You know why, Ken?
I don't know. Why?
Because maybe they look like us.
Ooh, so like you could see an alien and you wouldn't even know it was an alien?
That is something that another fine professor in our fair land is positing as a theory.
Yes.
That there is the possibility that because conditions are fairly narrow to have life in the universe.
This is a professor named Simon Conway Morris of Cambridge University. And, I think this might be across the pond here. I'm not sure. but he has reasons to believe that aliens will look a lot like people.
Oh.
So this could be, I don't know. I'm a fan of sci-fi. So, I think about a lot of the representations of aliens that kind of people come up with in movies and stories or whatnot. And a lot of times it does end up looking, pretty much like a human. Like, basically all the aliens in Star Trek are humanoid, at least. They have two arms and two legs. One head, And for the most part, in Star Wars, the same. And I guess...
Well, Star Wars has more of a variety of animals that have turned into a humanoid form.
Yeah, yeah. Like, Jabba the Hutt, for instance, is going to be...
Yeah.
An outlier.
Well, he looks like a slug, though.
Well.
So he looks like a bug instead of an animal.
I'm not sure he would appreciate hearing that kind of talk from you, but...
He can bring it.
I mean, slugs are animals, I believe. I don't know.
I would call those an insect.
But insects are animals.
Okay.
I mean, are they plants?
No.
All right.
Okay. I guess I don't count insects as animals.
Wow, you're like a speciesist.
I'm a speciesist, I guess.
Insects are animals, too. I can see them picketing, yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait till they picket Stunt Granny. It'll be great.
Right, we're going to get all the insects really pissed off at us, which, I don't know. We might have to circle back and kind of deal with that as events progress, as events warrant. But in the meantime... I always thought that it was sort of just a lack of imagination, I guess, that for the most part, aliens in our, various media generally look like people, even like the classic little green man or little gray man.
I guess the two aliens that the alien from Alien.
No. Yeah. That was very imaginative. Of course, based on the work of
H.R.
Giger, yes.
Yes. I think he actually designed them. I don't think it's based on the work. I believe that he actually did the set design and whatnot.
Oh, yes, you're right. for at least the first movie, yeah.
Yeah, at least the first movie. So yeah, it's not based on that. Is actual his art?
Yes.
I
might argue it could still be considered to be based on his art, but
yes, I suppose you could say that.
In addition to that, it was also directly his art.
Yeah. And I was almost going to say Predator, but honestly, he would fall under your same category. Head, arms, legs,
yes.
Vaguely humanoid.
Different kind of mouth. I guess I would give them some kind of props for that, but you're right. Basically humanoid. And even Jabba the Hutt has a head and arms.
Yes. He does have a couple of additional parts that slugs do not normally have.
Perhaps a torso, we could even say.
Not
really a neck.
Yeah, definitely a torso, because the one part did not seem to move too much when he tried to relocate himself.
It seemed not used to really getting around by himself too much there in Jedi. By that point, at least. But... Maybe it's not laziness, Kevin. Maybe this professor seems to think that actually, through something known as evolutionary convergence, I want to say.
yes, that is what he was talking about.
And basically, that's a fancy term that means different creatures can evolve to have the same kind of features from different creatures.
Well, and it also goes back to, like he was saying, well, and the other part of his argument.
In the example he had was these kind of, the eye of a human and the eye of an octopus are actually similar in a lot of ways, even though they, like, evolved separately to get there.
Oh. So
they, humans and octopuses, octopi, did not, evolve their eyes. They did not evolve from a creature with eyes, I guess is what I'm saying. Like, they each kind of evolved their eyes through a separate mechanism. Is that making sense?
Yes.
But they end up being really similar. So by similar logic, an alien, the race out there that may, you know, live on an Earth-like planet will have reason to perhaps look like us in terms of our anatomy.
Right, because again, it goes back to the fairly narrow spectrum of the ability to live now. Just because, I mean, you know, you go a planet one way or the other, and we're getting pretty good at looking at those things. There does not appear to be much life below anything that was very, very...
You're talking about exoplanets now?
Exoplanets? I don't think so.
Outside of the solar system?
No, I'm talking about Venus.
Oh.
Hold on.
That's where women are from.
No. Venus is way out there. I'm thinking Mars and...
Of course, men from Mars. Just to... Kind of helping
just
people get these
up a little bit.
Just helping people to reorient, you know, their minds what we're talking about here.
Well, is Mars one planet further away from us?
They're
I'm
actually
bad at my
Earth is actually between Venus and Mars, so Venus is closer.
Oh, okay,
Venus is one closer, and it's basically they feel like a is almost the same size as Earth, and could be similar to Earth. They might have just had like a greenhouse effect that ran amok there, because like it's like unsuitable for life at this point. So for all we know, that could have been advanced life on Venus that basically destroyed the planet. But you know, that's just more of a sci-fi level than anything at this point.
Yeah, but there does not appear to be a whole lot of life having existed on either of our neighboratory planets.
Neighboratory?
Yeah.
Boy, I'm going to check Urban Dictionary, because I'm not sure that's a real word.
Well, hey, whatever. We have a podcast. We can make it up. Any of our neighbor planets, really. I did not read a Terry in there at all.
That is true.
Our neighbor planets.
Yes.
Is It is a good proper term.
No, I believe if we check the tape, you did say neighbor Terry. But
oh no, I said it. I'm just saying that there was no need to make up a word when all I needed to say was neighbor.
Yeah, but you're right in that having a podcast entitles you to being able to make up any word that you like. It's part of the deal when you sign up and get your podcasting license.
Yeah. It says it right on the paper right here. I know that you at home see this.
You carry yours around with you. That's interesting.
Well,
I've got mine at home in the fireproof tin.
We're at Stunt Granny offices. I can just walk on over to the file and pull it out.
You really did that pretty quickly there. You've got an efficient filing system. I like that.
Yep. Snap to it, man.
But, neighbor Terry Lee, Venus is a lot more like Earth, I guess. Except for the crazy greenhouse effect that's going on there. Which, I guess we're making it more like Venus. So, that's something.
that is something. And that might get talked about on another day. But, I guess since we've only... would it be that much different for you to see a gray alien as opposed to someone who looks like...
You're saying
I did
like...
enjoy the fact that they had a picture of David Beckham up there as a possible alien. Like, it kind of reminds me of Men in Black.
Yes, that was very true. That was a very... I feel like this guy could be... This professor could be trying to pitch, like, a Man in Black 4 movie at this point. in addition to his book, he might be trying to option that into some kind of movie deal starring Will Smith and the ghost of Tommy Lee Jones. Wait, is he still alive?
Yeah, yeah. He's still alive.
Of course he's still alive.
It might be the ghost of the pug that they used in the first movie.
Oh, right.
Frank may be deceased now.
No, that's right. He wasn't in the last one. They had like a picture of him above Will Smith's bed, which... is problematic to me for your main character. Like, who would have... What single guy would have a... I don't know. Anyway, it's a very strange life to be a member, an agent of the Men in Black, I would have to say. Like, you don't have a lot of personal entanglements. That you can't really, like, talk about your day.
Right.
For obvious reasons.
The best you can do is just blind yourself and forget about everything.
That's right. That is an option.
Yeah.
So. That's for all you Men in Black agents out there listening.
They'd have to retrain themselves every day. It would be like Latro in the Mist.
Wow. That'd be kind of crazy.
Yeah. Every 24 hours.
Dude, I think we are writing Men in Black 4 as we speak. Blank his memory every day and kind of like figure out this mystery somehow.
So it's like Groundhog's Day meets Men in Black.
Meets Memento. Yeah, I think so. And then, who knows, maybe we'll have them go back to ancient Greece somehow. And they did time traveling in the last one. I don't know if you saw that.
I still don't think I've read the last one.
Or seen the movie, even? Or do you read the movie?
Oh, I thought you were talking about the Latro and the Mist.
There. Yeah, no, if anyone isn't familiar with that, that's a pretty entertaining, for me at least, book series about a badass Roman mercenary in ancient Greece and various other places in the ancient world.
Right.
With a memory like Memento, I guess, where he will forget everything that happened after like 12 hours, I think.
I believe it's 24.
I want to say 12, because if I remember correctly, he asked the black man at one point, which that's problematic to have a character that is named the black man, I think. But he asked.
Well, I would imagine that they were fairly limited.
Well, I think the story was that he was from sub-Saharan Africa. But,
correct.
And could understand Greek, but did not want to speak Greek. So, like, he only spoke with gestures, and he did not actually speak. So they never knew what his name was.
Yeah, well, if you're not going to toss out your name, screw you. You either get one assigned to you. Well, yeah, he got one assigned to him.
The black man, yes.
If he doesn't like it, he needs to speak up then, yo.
Yeah, I guess it's, you know, he could be called what he wanted, but he chose not to give a name. So,
right. You're right.
So it does make sense.
Personal responsibility sometimes.
It does make sense in context within the larger story. Yeah, he asks him at one point how long it takes for him to forget. And he kind of pointed at the horizon and then like traced his hand over it and then pointed at the other side from east to west to indicate the time it takes for the sun to rise and set. So it was like half a day, basically.
Oh, okay. Well,
For some reason that sticks out. That I could see where you would think 24 hours maybe too, because...
Well, he wrote everything down before he went to bed. That means he's sleeping like 12 hours a day. He's a lazy fuck if he's sleeping 12 hours a day.
He gets up really a lot, but he doesn't get to write all the time at the same time either.
No.
So sometimes there's shit going on, you know? And strangely, at those times in the story, like, he's probably not able to write stuff down and then forgets about it later, and then you've got to, like, try to figure out what it was that happened in between. It's a very interesting book.
Yeah, it's a very good book.
A little off topic, but it's worth checking out.
We never go off topic.
Yeah, I know. I apologize to everyone who's stuck with us these 52 episodes. And I feel like we finally let them down by going off topic here tonight. So
time in 52 episodes.
I'm going to take responsibility and just go ahead and say that, yeah, that happened. But we're going to do at least another 52 without having anything like that happen again.
Oh, man. Well, there was other planetary news. I mean, I think we're done talking about aliens possibly looking like humans.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it makes sense. Now, right. Basically, to wrap that up, now I get it. Like, it actually kind of does make sense that might be what aliens look like.
Right. Yeah. Again, like, H.R. Giger is, like, one of not many people that have come up with a real alien-looking alien.
Yeah.
But even then, you could argue that it was vaguely humanoid because it did have legs and arms.
True. And it was able to sort of, in a fashion, mate with us. So that kind of makes, in some ways, human.
Yeah, they could kind of, they could communicate with each other, at least.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know... I don't know if it counts as mating or just using us as a sort of a nest while they're doing their thing. It's definitely not consensual.
It was definitely not consensual.
Yes, however you look at it.
The aliens did like to rape you.
in a fashion, yes.
It was face raping.
Oh, no. Yes, it was. Good lord.
Well, we went from it's off not that topic ki-
this
to
is not that kind of
off,
show, people.
Off Keller.
Yeah, you know, 52 episodes and we have not had that kind of comment yet, and I'm afraid we've just let you down twice in one night.
Well, you started it. I mean, you were talking about the black man.
No, I know. I feel like I'm responsible, but let's try to move forward with dignity here, Kevin. The other thing I wanted to say is if we're looking for life on planets that are like Earth, it really makes a lot of sense for them to look like humans because we've developed in similar environments.
Correct.
But if there is some kind of life out there that's like, whatever, silicon-based or something, or maybe it's just a cloud of particles that somehow has intelligence, like that is all bets are off at that point, I guess. You know, we just haven't come across anything like that yet.
Correct.
But
we have come across new pictures of Pluto very recently.
Oh, yeah, that's right, we have.
And I've got to admit, I did not, even though we did an article, or we did a story on this satellite hitting Pluto soon, because I feel like we did it with like a month out.
Yeah, I remember that.
I did not. I paid precious little attention to the early pictures of Pluto.
Yeah, it started to get a little more interesting, I think, as things got into sharper focus. And there was one day this week where it was as close as they were going to be able to get and still get like the full disc, like the full, basically you see the whole, what you think of as a planet, you know. From there on, they're going to be too close to be able to get the whole thing at once. Does that make sense?
Correct.
So, yeah. And that was pretty cool to be able to see, like, freaking Pluto that's, like, so freaking far out there.
Basically, yeah.
Like...
Even if it's not a planet, it's still a planet to me, damn it.
Well, it is. It's a dwarf planet. I mean, it's not a planet. But you could still technically say it's a type of planet. It belongs within the set of objects that we call planets, is what I'm saying. Even though it's not a planet, with a capital P.
Yes, even if it's lowercase p. Also, this article, though, that you linked me to that did give me a full view of at least one picture of it, because I know that there's supposed to be more to come here.
Yeah, and I don't know if you can see the heart that people were seeing on Pluto with the...
Oh, right there.
Yeah. So people enjoyed that as well. on the internet.
Okay. Well, it's just the way... it was pretty interesting. There was an artist named Don Dixon in 1979 who was actually fairly familiar with the... I don't know if chromatology is right.
Well, he was a very specialized artist, I guess. What did they say? A space artist? I'm sure they had a better term for it. But,
right.
He basically takes the known information about some object in space and then from there draws and paints what it would look like if you were able to actually be up close with it and see it. And I thought it was kind of cool, which was why I wanted to share it. And then it ties into Pluto in general, but
Right, and it was, I agree, like, the guy's like, okay, this isn't perfect, but in general, this guy nailed at least the general look of how Pluto was going to be, just from knowing all the different gaseous formations and how they reacted to each other, and really a rough estimate of, like, how the weather would be there.
Right.
And,
like, how the ice would sublimate and turn directly to gas at some points, and what that would look like, you know, in terms of patterns on the surface. So, yeah, he did a pretty bang-up job there. If you were living in 1979 and purchased this book, were lucky enough to, at the time, you would have had a pretty damn good... picture of what Pluto really looked like, which is I think that's cool. I mean, it's just cool that there's, like, in general, someone out there who does this sort of thing. Like,
yeah,
that takes a certain type of imagination, I think, to you know, maybe there's a different part of your brain that controls that sort of thing. But
one would think so, because he's got to put a lot of information together to come up with this nice estimation of how things look. The only thing that he didn't really get right was the color of the planet.
Yeah, he was a little off on the color, but...
really, if you're arguing that, though, I think you need to be smacked for the moment. And that's the way...
It's not like he made it purple or something. It's within...
Well, and they kind of explain why he thought it was... it may have been more reddish. Methane on the surface would get hit by ultraviolet light from the sun and turn into more complex organic compounds called tholins, which are reddish.
Ah.
So that's why the guy had a little bit of a reddish hue to it, but it doesn't really have that much red involved in it.
Yeah, like, I think, again, it, you know, if you take nothing else away from this segment... Bullet points. It is pretty cool to be able to see Pluto up close. And this guy did a pretty awesome job of painting Pluto before anyone ever saw a real picture of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty amazing in and of itself.
I think, like, I maybe had a third one, though.
Oh, you had a third point.
Yes. There could have been a third point at some point. But okay, Pluto. People, I guess, in some ways, there's been some chatter, I think, online about, you know, people are, again, unhappy that Pluto is not a planet, and that to them, Pluto will always be a planet.
People will just get angry about anything. Like, it's not worth my time. Like, I guess I will always think of it as a planet with a capital P. I'm not about to complain about it on the internets.
Yeah, I think the thing that, you know, NDT, Neil deGrasse Tyson, is a very, you know, I guess known for being in favor of Pluto declassified as a capital P planet. did you like NDT?
Yeah, it's not MPH, but it has an interesting ring to it.
Yeah. So NDT is known for kind of happily proclaiming that Pluto is not a planet and people should just basically deal with it. Which is solid advice, I think. Because I did watch some type of TV special where he lays out a good case based just on, if nothing else, how small Pluto is. It's something like the moon is like 5 times bigger than Pluto.
Holy shit snacks. I did not realize this.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, I mean, and we saw, Kevin, that Piccolo was able to destroy the whole moon in one blast. So Pluto would not be nearly as impressive as a capital P planet. Because then would the moon be a planet? I mean, no, because it's circling the Earth, I guess. But it is less of a grand sort of celestial body than what we may have had in our imaginations.
I just haven't really done, again, like, I understand why he's doing it since he's an astrophysicist.
It does fall within his wheelhouse there, I would say.
Right. But I guess I don't know enough about the declassifying, like, even having done the previous article that we did about it, because I don't know what the classification is, but just simply now knowing the fact that it's 5 times smaller than the moon, it's just like, oh, okay, well, if we don't consider the moon a planet, then fuck Pluto. Like, you don't really need to go any further than that, as far as I'm concerned.
That is kind of what does it for me, too. And there are other objects that are at least similar, if not bigger, and I think they could be bigger in size to Pluto, that we don't consider planets. So it's like, historically, people think of Pluto as a planet, and I think a lot of it has to do with it's the only planet to have been discovered by an American. So, like, that's, probably has something to do with it.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah.
Nor do I still care to classify it as a planet still.
Yeah, that is not getting your patriotic juices flowing. You're ready to, like, plant the flag on Pluto.
No, I mean, I would imagine if we can get something out there and get more information on just the universe in general, it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's a planet or a dwarf planet, to me, is kind of immaterial.
Yeah. I would say that, yeah, we're probably just going there for historical reasons to check it out. But, you know, there's real reasons to check it out, too, I think, in terms of learning about those kind of objects out there and that area, that region of space. Like, it's cool. Like,
yeah, like I said, it's pretty cool. Like, it was kind of immaterial to me what type of planet it is. I guess that's another reason why it's just I don't care about that argument.
Yeah, I guess you, in a way, like, both people are right, you know? Like, it can't, you can still like Pluto. Like, there's nothing wrong with liking Pluto.
Right.
But it's just not really like one of the big guy planets.
And, right.
You know, people need to kind of realize that too, I guess. But,
no. Cut your enthusiasm for Pluto back a little bit, guys.
No, I'm not saying that. But
well, I said cut it back. Don't stop it. Just right. dial
Listen,
it back a couple of notches.
We've already got the insects really pissed off at us this episode. I don't think we need to, like, have the Pluto people. Plutians? What would you call someone from Pluto?
Plutarchs.
Whoa. See, I think they're trying to contact us even as we are sitting here, Kevin.
Yeah, something happened out in my kitchen.
The Plutarchs are making their displeasure known. So I think we should welcome our new overlords.
Yeah, it's the new ghost that lives in my house, evidently.
Yeah. So my fourth point then for this segment would be don't anger
the Plutarchs.
The Plutarchs. Yes. That's you're going to have a bad time. That's what I'm saying. Don't do it.
Right. well, you could upset another group of people. If we talk about the little shell video that you sent to me. It was about the prelude.
Yes. Oh, you're referring to the largest floating object ever made?
Yes.
Yes, I'm familiar.
Maybe this is the size of Pluto.
It could be. It sounds like it's pretty close. Because there's something like 15 like gas processing plants that they're having to wire together. Well, not wire, but like connect pipes together. Yeah. It looks a lot like, you remember like that old Windows screensaver with the pipes like that kind of like are snaking all around in different colors? I mean, these...
it looked like that in real life.
Except...
Yeah, I do remember that screen. It was like one of the first screensavers.
Yes. Yeah, with the pipes running around, and it was like, oh my god, that's awesome. Until, you live with it for a while. But,
for years.
Yeah. But it reminded you somewhat of that. At least it reminded me of somewhat of that. Except this... Just like... Getting an idea, it took me a while to like get a feeling for how big this project was. Like, you know, you were talking about all the different project leads that they were interviewing through. And this, we should say, I guess, is a kind of corporate PR piece done by Shell. Yes.
Because they were going to liquefy natural gas
on site. In the ocean, yeah.
Right. So I would imagine this thing's going to get deployed places.
Yeah.
And it's not just going to be a one-time use kind of a facility.
From what I understand, it's supposed to last for 50 years. So that's...
Oh, okay. That's their plan. Wow.
So, and I imagine it's a significant investment up front. You know, I don't know if they said in the article, I don't remember them saying how much the whole thing was supposed to cost, but it's got to be a lot of money. And
I would put the cost at a poop ton.
Yeah. No, I think it is. It may even be a metric poop ton.
It could be. There were a lot of British people on there, so they might be offended if I just called it a metric poop ton.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because they were making it in South Korea, they said, and I don't know, they were able to find people that were good at this sort of thing. Because, the equipment that they were using, like, was just so huge. I don't understand, like, what else they would do with this stuff. I mean, I guess there's other things that they make that are that big, but these cranes were, like, enormous. And,
I mean, it looked like a video game arm that was moving some of the pieces. I mean, it was huge. Like, it was like your old Erector set, except if you were moving a piece that was like the size of a football stadium.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, I don't even know how you describe, like,
it was like a cube.
You just gotta describe it by scale. Like, it just looked monstrous.
It was a cube that, like, each surface was, like, as long as a football stadium, basically. It seemed like, that when they were lifting these parts and putting them into, position. I guess we're talking about the last, we were saying the last topic about Pluto. We gave it the stamp of cool. This is somewhat cool, but it's also like somewhat, you know, crappy that this is something that's going to be extracting natural, you know, like fossil fuels. And, you know, natural gas, I guess, is supposedly cleaner than like coal, but you're still going to be putting a lot of carbon in the air, I would think, throughout this process.
Yeah, that was the thing. I was like, oh my gosh, like, it's it'll be interesting to see. Like, I guess I haven't really read anything more about this, just because I watched this video shortly before we started. So it wasn't like I kind of took a look to see what and not that I'd even probably understand all of it in a complete fashion, but just to see what this thing's really all about. Because, I mean, it was only a 3-minute, it's 3 minutes and 19 seconds, this clip.
Yeah.
So it is not particularly long, even for a PR piece. Right. It felt like it was more of a snippet of the entire documentation of building this gigantic project. Yeah. And I mean, you have the means to do that for anything now, and it makes sense to be doing that when you're building this scale of a, you know, no matter what you think of it, I guess in the environmental sense, I think they're going about it the correct way.
Well, it is, I guess it is sort of like impressive in the way that like big, you know, tall buildings are impressive, or like going to the moon is impressive, you know. It's like an accomplishment of engineering and like people like figuring stuff out and making something cool. But at the same time, it's also like probably gonna do some more of that Venusification that we were talking about earlier.
I have again seen around the whole sucking the CO2 out of the atmosphere article crop up again once we covered that a while ago also.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. I've seen a new one from a different website, so I did not feel the need to read it. I'm sure that there may be some updated numbers in the month or two that there's been in between the articles, but I would not imagine a whole lot about that has been updated.
Gotcha. Well, is it time to update our listeners on our beer of the week here, Kevin?
Yeah, it is time to do so, and you know what? Funny thing, I took a picture of it, and I don't know where my phone is.
That is funny, man.
Because it was from Victory Brewing.
That's like rain on your wedding day.
Oh, right here. I'm a jackass. It was right in front of my face, yo.
It's like,
but at the store that I go that I frequent. Sometimes they get, Red Thunder. It was a malt beverage aged in, red wine
barrels. Yes.
And, I'll tell you what, it is, malty and it is red winey.
True to form. Yeah.
Yeah. The, two things that they mention, they deliver. It's fairly sweet, but it also kind of has that wine back end to it.
You know, it just made me realize something. I don't know if you remember my dad sometimes would have wine and beer that he would mix together as kind of his personal cocktail.
No, I don't remember that. I remember the Colt 45s.
Yes, but it just made me realize that this is kind of what, like, everybody thinks that's a crazy idea, but now, like, somebody actually did that, you know? in a way, really. I mean, it's right. giving it that flavor at least. So I don't know. Who's to say? Like, some people are considered crazy one day, and then they might be considered visionaries down the road.
Yeah, Tesla was crazy until recently.
That's right. Now everybody's on his jock. That's how it goes.
That is how it goes.
Of course, he's not around to really appreciate that, but whatever. I mean, you get the point, what we're trying to say.
Yep, here. Sucks to be you.
Sorry, Tesla.
Yep.
So yeah, we wanted to get that point out as well this week, so glad we got to hit that one, Kevin.
Yeah, glad we got to hit this bottle. I mean, it was an interesting beer. It was very cheap because they do this thing where they buy out-of-season beers and then resell them to the consumer at a cheap cheap rate.
That's a nice option there.
So it's nice to invest a little bit of money for an off-season brand every now and again.
Absolutely. So, well, I guess it's another... we're breaking off another 52 next time, Kevin. It's been a good episode.
Yeah, yes, it has been. So for at Gozer33, this is at Frango11. Follow us all together on at StuntGranny. For sometimes... I started doing it today, the OPA Book Club, as we're calling it.
Yes.
Trying to pre-tweet some of the articles. Sometimes we have some cuts to make.
Right.
So some of them don't always make it. You might see me retweet them next week.
Yeah.
Do not be surprised.
Well, you know, it gives people time to kind of marinate in some of these ideas, and then they will be... more mentally prepared to hear what we have to say, I think. So
that right.
could work out in the long run, I guess is what I'm saying.
Train our audience.
Like, you know, something like that, sure.
Whip them into shape. Make them smart like us.
Yeah, smart like us. Right. That's right. Exactly. Have a great week, everybody.